your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Robin. Welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Sunday, October 5th. We record this new show. I've been away with family visiting and attending a wedding this past weekend, but it's a chance to catch up with some White Sox news, as several coaches' contracts were not renewed, including both the pitching coach Ethan Katz and hitting coach Marcus Thames. So why are the White Sox making more changes to the coaching staff? And do we have any clues in the types of people the White Sox want to recruit for these open positions? We'll discuss that and take a look at the White Sox Arizona Fall League roster as that season's about to begin. Brady Montgomery is going to miss the start of the Arizona Fall League, but who is worth following for White Sox fans tracking the Glendale Desert Dogs? In the end, we'll play what I imagine is going to be a very fun but also aggravating game. Can we name all 62 players that played for the Chicago White Sox in 2025? So let's get started. Joining me are Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. And hello, gentlemen. And for our podcast listeners, in our upcoming episodes, we'll be doing more of a recap of the 2025 season. Also talk about the postseason, but breaking it down in depth as far as each position group and highlighting some areas where the White Sox can improve and what we think are going to be some continuing storylines as we get deeper into the offseason, reaching the GM meetings, and then eventually the winter meetings and start seeing more activity. But here, the White Sox are making more work for themselves, James Fegan. I was a little bit worried that this offseason could be a bit slow, but now that you need a new pitching coach, a new hitting coach, a new first base coach, you need a new AAA manager, you still need more players on the roster, this White Sox offseason might be short on impact moves, but plenty of busy work to keep us busy until spring training in February. And I want to start with pitching coach Ethan Katz. James, why was Katz's contract not renewed by the Chicago White Sox?
I was about to say, we're scraping a little bit bottom of the bin. I don't think you could be like, oh, we couldn't put in a bid on Kyle Tucker. We were busy trying to find a new AAA manager. We had a lot to tackle.
Priorities.
Katz at this point had outlived both the GM and the manager for which he was hired under, which is a hard, you know, in most organizations, I know we're used to extreme amounts of stability in the pitching coach position here. In most organizations, that's a hard way to get renewed. And you know, I think there's generally positive things said about, you know, what Eason's work was. I think they all know that, you know, at least I haven't checked the final standings at the last day of the season, but at least midway when I wrote that article, like they had the worst stuff plus in the league. They were offering, you know, something that Brian Bannister, who I believe approved of Katz's job and wouldn't have, you know, recommended this on the merits, thought he was doing pretty good to put together a production for a pitching staff that, you know, once Martin Perez went down, I think Tyler Alexander was the only like one on a person on like a major league free agent deal. Pretty much everyone like making under $1 million across the board, maybe like Stephen Wilson's arbitration figure. I'd have to double check it, but like it was league minimum talent, like all the way around in terms of like acquisition cost. So I don't think you'd be like, why did this pitching staff finish 20th? Ethan's got to go. And I think that's also something that I think of a lot, in terms of people pointing out the walk rate that they've had over the last years. Like, yeah, it's kind of like the first thing it spiked up and was unimpressive as a result, but it also kind of lined up with the talent of, I think the 2022 struggles is where it struggled, like pointing out the most of 2023, but like its depreciation kind of lined up with like, all right, you're no longer giving him good talent to really work with most of the time. Like his method of getting outs is probably like a lot of nibbling for what he's gotten sore. So I don't think it was about merits. I think it's pretty clearly about giving the new staff, getting a new manager, getting a new GM a chance to collaborate on their own hire rather than continuing one. I know you have Jim lined up to talk about whether that's the right move, and that's probably a better person because, like, obviously I talked to Ethan a lot over the last years. He's a very frequent interview target for me because I felt he articulated kind of like the new stuff that needed to be done for them to survive pitching wise. And he was kind of like my factor for kind of understanding a lot of the new language and strategies being deployed in that front. So I almost wonder like how unbiased I can be talking about him, because I think like even if you think there are better pitcher coaches out there, I think he was had a big part of like dragging the White Sox towards modernity over his tenure. And you know, you can get another one, you can bit one that maybe Will Venable and Chris Getz have more experience with. Maybe it's more aligned with what their new strategy of trying to be the Brewers all entails. But I don't think this is the same situation that he was replacing by a long shot in terms of like you need to upgrade to the new generation of pitching coaches, because I would be surprised to see him in another dugout around this year. That's certainly the people who reached out to me and said that were fans of his or people who had success with them. But some of those people are people who, you know, are top five in AL East Cy Young by Allen this year. So it's going to be something to upgrade that position. It's probably going to be more about fit than merit, I would think.
We'll get to stuff plus in a moment, because that's a lot of my notes, and we'll talk about what the White Sox stuff plus was during Katz's tenure. But Jim, from your personal perspective, how do you assess Katz's tenure with the Chicago White Sox that started in the 2021 season?
Here's some cold, unvarnished truth about Ethan Katz, James. The words of Mr. T: don't get too close. You can't pity a fool if you get too close. No, I think Katz did a decent job given all of the churn. I know earlier in the year we talked about like whether he was having a sneaky good season given the stuff plus rating, given that the bullpen found some stability without like any exciting additions or without anybody, you know, maybe Grant Taylor was the one that really, you know, the stuff jumped out. Otherwise it was like harder in progress from Jordan Leisure and a whole bunch of guys who were throwing sliders and sweepers and not really having standout velocity. And the fact that they got any kind of cohesive bullpen for any stretch of the season out of it seemed like a job well done or a feather in his cap. I think if you were to, you know, kind of point out weak spots, I would say like the stagnation of like Jonathan Cannon or Davis Martin still approaching a final form. Like he's been effective, but you know, the strikeouts have really dropped, beyond a point where like he is a lock for next year's rotation, but maybe not a lock for future success given just the lack of traditional metrics he's succeeding with. And, you know, I think for Cannon, it's just been more of a case of like, well, if you need to go back to a two seam sinker, why didn't he do it earlier? And was that a case where like, you know, he's somebody who tinkers too much and that's a Cannon thing, or, you know, whether it's a, you know, Bannister thing of just, you know, who's really going to be the point person for making these adjustments in season. But, overall you look at this success of, you know, Dylan Cease, you look at the success of Garrett Crochet, you look at even like Shane Smith and Mike Vassell, Rule 5 picks who lasted a full year, not only lasted a full year, but also like were the best pitchers. Well, Smith is the best pitcher in the rotation. Vassell, if not the best reliever, certainly like the most valuable reliever based on how many innings he provided and just the roles he filled over the course of the season. So he had successes, and I think they outweigh the failures in terms of, or you know, even not so much failures, but just demerits, maybe you would say, over the course of his tenure. So, yeah, like James said, not a bad performance, all things considered, given the churn and the general direction the franchise took. But if it is a case where, you know, when Getz fired Pedro Grifol and, you know, they recruited Venable to take the position, and, you know, whether it's a case of Jerry Reinsdorf being, or whether it's a case of like Getz saying, like, we like these coaches, see how you work with them, or if it's a case of Jerry Reinsdorf being, you know, we'll let you fire a manager halfway through, but I don't want to pay all these coaches to do nothing either. So figure out which ones you can work with. And then if it's an imperfect arranged marriage, then we'll talk after their contracts are up. I could see, you know, both things being valid. But if it's a case where Venable, he wants to put his own stamp on the staff that he was strangely deprived of when he took over, and it's just like a year late in happening, that's certainly understandable. I could see it being fine and being reasonable just in a weird delay where, you know, Katz gets a job, succeeds elsewhere, Venable gets a pitching coach who continues the foundation that Katz laid. You know, I think if anything, maybe he was stretched too thin, dragging up the pitching staff and pitching apparatus to modern standards by himself, or maybe like he and Matt Selesky were the ones doing it after Don Cooper, probably, I don't know how many years late the White Sox moved on from Don Cooper, but it was at least a few. If they're in a position to run because cats walked, then maybe everybody ends off for the better because cats can go to a new place without the baggage that maybe he had from all the years that he had kind of being the person trying to get everybody up to speed.
I think the progression kind of like reminds me of like people fretting about like the Bears will hire the new GM and then he's stuck with the old coach and the old quarterback and then they draft a new quarterback, like not things to be aligned. The White Sox kind of a similar case here where they hired a new GM, but he's stuck with the previous manager for a year and then they hired a new manager and he has all these like guys with 1 year left on his contract and like we go through one more year and everyone, by all accounts, like Venable had great relationships with all the coaches who did get let go, certainly with Katz and spoke highly of them, but we just had to wait the year for him to have these contracts clear out where he can now have basically the influx of hires where you see him have influence on that he really didn't at all last year, where the one hire is basically McKinven and it's not someone he's it's not his Tozar, it's someone who's seemed by all accounts as a great hire and like really value with the Brewers and a great opportunity to get him, but it's kind of even that was like even that thing to mutually hire guys with Getz, they don't really have that window to really do it with in very impactful position. They have bench coach and then not any knock on Joel McKeithen as the assistant hitting coach, but like assistant hitting coach has not like shaped the direction of the staff level higher the way this group kind of will be going forward.
For the assistants that did stay, James, just taking a look ahead real quick as far as like who the White Sox could be targeting as far as new hires. Would they just be promoting assistants from within to the full-time leading the charge as far as the coaches? Or are they looking for more outside people to join the White Sox organization?
I mean, I would expect more outside hiring because that's been kind of both the push from Getz and Venable. So I don't know exactly what shape it will take, but I would expect more. I would think it's going to be more tilted towards external additions than moving people up from the minor league system, especially if Sergio is not coming back. Like that's probably be the 1A of who you'd think of the sort of person ready to make that leap.
And now that you mentioned Sergio, Jim, are you surprised that Sergio Santos is not sticking with the White Sox?
A little bit, I guess, in the order that it happened. I know that talking to him, and I asked him about just what he, the process of him interviewing for the White Sox managerial job before Venable got it, and just what he learned and what he learned about the holes he had to address. And he said AAA was a nice progression, but it seems like time on a major league staff is something that most MLB teams want to see, or that's the sense he got. So he was hoping to get a spot in a major league staff at some point in the near future, whether it was next year, whether it was just down the road. But like probably the next stepping stone was that kind of role in order to keep building up his resume to where there are no glaring holes or deficiencies. So like if the White Sox wanted him back, or at least held out an offer for him to return to Charlotte, and he found a job on a major league staff elsewhere, I would not have been surprised. But the fact that like he was let go, or like that he was his contract was not renewed, and they didn't really have an interest, it seemed, in giving him the Charlotte job back if he wanted to do that. That kind of surprised me a little bit because he seemed like he was very popular players. Certainly the White Sox social media team loved putting him out there in terms of he's an engaging personality. Very sharp with his sound bites in terms of presenting pitches on players and pitches on philosophies to where it's very a very easy quote and made for good 30-second copy. So I could see a future for him in the White Sox organization. So the fact that like the White Sox were the ones to be no, good luck in your future job search, that surprised me a little bit. I don't know if it's a case where because it is a little bit of move up or move on when it comes to minor league coaches in a lot of cases. Some, like I think of Rick Sweets, he's been like the Nashville Sounds manager for 13 years or something like that. Sometimes they are just, that's their job, that's their final destination, and they find their niche with an organization where the organization trusts them to be that person maintaining their major league standards in the minor leagues, and everybody's happy. But a lot of times it's a move up or move on type case. So if it is a case where, like, Guillermo Quiroz, who just, won the Southern League title, if he wants a promotion as well and wants advancements, perhaps it's a case where they only have room for one. And so, if they're looking to, establish contracts, maybe that's something we'll see down the pipe when they announce their development staff. So there are ways that this could work out in a way that makes sense, but I think the order of it right now is a little surprising.
Back to Ethan Katz, as James mentioned, Stuff Plus and league rankings for the White Sox. In 2025, the White Sox ranked 28th in Major League Baseball with a 95 Stuff Plus. So for podcast listeners, if you're not familiar with the metric, this is something that Eno Saris has been writing about a lot over the last few years, even on his podcast as well through The Athletic. And it is taking consideration all of the characteristics of a pitch thrown: release point, velocity, horizontal, vertical movement, spin rate. And how those all those pitches that a staff throws, all the pitchers that throw pitches for that team, how do they measure up against each other? The White Sox, with their pitchers and their stuff, rank bottom three in Major League Baseball. So that's what Ethan Katz is working with. The White Sox WAR for a pitching staff, according to Fangraphs, was 11.6. That's good for 22nd in Major League Baseball. So the White Sox, you can make an argument, as the pitching staff outperformed the stuff that they actually had. When Katz first started with the White Sox back in 2021, the White Sox pitching staff plus was 107. That was good for fourth in Major League Baseball. And you may recall the White Sox pitching staff led Major League Baseball in staff WAR with 27.9. Since then, 99 stuff plus in 2022, 97 stuff plus in 2023, 2024, 94, and 2025, 95. So I understand the perspective of Will Venable wants his guys. I get that. Chris Getz wants his guys. I get that. But James, there's got to be some pressure on the White Sox. And I don't get, but I also get from Chris Getz's perspective that I do not have enough cash on hand from my bosses, Josh, to address all of our pitching issues this upcoming offseason. But this is obviously an area that I think the White Sox are addressing, James, is that they are aware that they need pitchers with better quality stuff. It doesn't matter who your pitching coach is. If you're still walking in 2026 with the bottom three pitching staff and overall stuff, it's going to be tough to really overcome that and be a league average pitching staff. And you got Shane Smith next year. You got Grant Taylor. Fingers crossed, Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz join the White Sox. These guys have really impressive arsenals, but I don't know how the White Sox are going to find them. But Brian Bannister and the White Sox front office, James, Gene Watson makes it sound like this is a priority this offseason, that the White Sox just need to find pitchers with a lot better stuff and not deception, it seems.
I will say that, one, I guess I should address your question, not just complain about the metric. But in general, Stuff Plus attempts to find the objective value of a pitch, but pitches can't be objective because their value and their effectiveness is subjective to one each other. A changeup that drops 3 inches and is at 85 is, relative to how much it plays off of the fastball before it, not just on its own. And Stuff Plus historically undermeasures changeups, in my opinion, and the White Sox have a very changeup dependent staff with what they put out, especially in their starting rotation, with changeups that probably perform better than their grade on Stuff Plus. To kick away my soapbox, sure, yes, they need more Stuff Plus. They need, they lack high octane arms. Bringing back the Davis Martin thread, I was asking, one of the questions I was asking Bannister about near the end of the year is Davis Martin has all these cool pitches, and also Davis Martin is a underdog story for just getting here and being a 14th rounder who was a slow burn development project and now can give you 150 innings of 4 ERA. That's not something to just oh, why isn't it better? But also you kind of watch some of the pitches he throws and the way he upgraded his slider over the course of the year and wonder does this dude seem like he should be striking out more than 20% of hitters? And I think Bannister picked up what I was putting down. I asked it to Ethan as well later on, but like they're both more probably like, I think we've done pretty well to get Davis to this point, more than like, oh, there's so much like upside we're leaving at the table. I think. So I think generally the franchise looks as like, where are we gonna get more stuff? Is like, yeah, that Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz that we've had in the oven should be out any time now, and that's kind of the big answer for how our rotation looks a lot different. Notably, like the White Sox in general have made the, I wouldn't say miscalculation, but I appreciate it that they state very firmly what they are able to state firmly, like Luis Robert's coming back, Mike Vassell's in the bullpen. What they don't say is like Mike Tauchman's coming back or Grant Taylor is still in the bullpen for sure. Those are things that they all like have pushed towards like will reviewing, which maybe Grant Taylor is part of, maybe not next year, maybe down the road, part of how the rotation gets more stuff less. I think they believe that there's a little bit more answers internal. And I certainly think that's probably the way that they're more suited to address it than certainly free agency. And if you're in trade, then it's kind of like what level of arm, what type of pitching is worth, you know, some of your prospect depth. Like, is there a pitcher or a young post-type guy with a lot of control left who's worth Edgar Caro sort of calculate? Maybe that's how you add your own stuff list. Is maybe Tanner McDougal and Christian Opper like a bit farther down the road are part of that option just because they throw so hard. Their fastball is probably going to grade up pretty well. I know just looking at Tanner's stuff in person, like I bet those breaking balls probably grade out pretty fine on stuff plus. So I think probably their answer to that is more internally. Certainly like maybe in their bullpen candidates, like maybe they look more toward less towards guys who are deceptive, but have low stuff scores and more guys who have high stuff scores, but the hurdle you have to cross for them is control and see if that's what they can kind of fix this offseason more so than the other route they went. But as far as like, you know, signing like the preeminent free agent starter, that would be a surprise for how to solve it.
Right.
I think they're more like, we have to, this what we have cooking in house is going to answer that eventually. It's probably their primary answer to that.
Yeah, because I was going to say, that's why I mentioned like, if Getz's rebuttal to me is I don't have enough money to fix other problems. I think that's where the money comes in to be a factor, Jim. And again, we'll have a whole podcast episode recapping the White Sox pitching staff and what they could be looking forward to. But this is something, it's just going to be on repeat. Pitching is so damn expensive in the free agent market. We talked about that last offseason. Before Matthew Boyd got blown out of the water in game one in Milwaukee, Matthew Boyd shocked me. $14 million for a guy who barely pitched in 2024. And Matthew Boyd was one of the Chicago Cubs' best starting pitchers. So joke on me, but it seems like that's the going rate for a pitcher coming off Tommy John who has any type of starting experience, $14 million. The White Sox don't even spend that much money on an entire free agent class. Let alone on one pitcher. So do you like this strategy, Jim? If this is the way the White Sox are going to address it, is that, hey, if this pitching staff is going to have better stuff overall, we're going to have to develop it.
It is. I mean, it makes sense. And you see them directing their efforts towards it, but then you see like Hagen Smith his first year and being a very unimpressive first step forward in that regard, especially when you see Trey Savage drafted. How many picks after Smith?
15.
Just dominating in the postseason in his first full year. I'm not sure when you were doing your draft coverage.
High. I had him very high.
Yeah. Seeing that that not work out immediately when you think like, oh, low slot lefties or lefties with stuff and unorthodox deliveries, that's in our wheelhouse. We have two lefties that we can pretty much fast track the majors, or at least if not fast track, have them on target for being contributors in 2026 and then both either take a step back or just never quite get it going. And now you're hoping that 2026 is the year that it all comes together for them in the high minors. So it's their hearts are in the right place, whether they have all of the internal options they need to start pushing somebody with ace caliber stuff. If not, ace caliber, metal, I guess, for lack of a better word, just everything that goes into being an ace, being the consistency behind the stuff. That's probably, you can't project that yet, but I would hope that by the end of 2026, you start seeing at least one of these guys, Smith, Schultz, you know, further down the road, Opper, McDougal, somebody being worthy of starts in August, in September, to give you a glimpse of how they produce this internally. If it is a case where, you know, Schultz and Smith continue to be just short of impressive and McDougal and Opper either stall out or just hit walls, obstacles to clear in Birmingham, then I think it's a case where, you know, we'll see what the work stoppage situation is like at the end of 2026 and 2027. Something they would have to address if they're not able to produce it themselves while this lineup is supposed to be past the rebuilding phase and into the part of like augmenting a team that's supposed to be contending for something.
Yeah, Trey Yesavage, by the way, I had him ranked 12th in the 2024 MLB draft rankings database. He was the third pitcher overall in my rankings behind Chase Burns and Hagen Smith. And yeah, Burns has already pitched in the postseason. Trey Yesavage is pitching the postseason. Hagen Smith helped the Birmingham Barons win a double-A championship. He's getting there. Now, whoever the White Sox hires pitching coach, I don't think it's an easy job. I think it's a job that would be a warm welcome, very collaborative. The White Sox are moving forward. They are catching up. You do have bright minds already within the organization. I think you would hear whoever interviews for the job or gets the pitching coach job for the White Sox would be very excited to join the organization. There's some work to do. And can you get more out of these pitchers? If Bannister doesn't feel like the White Sox can get any more out of what they got out of Davis Martin, okay, well, that's fine, Brian. But you got to find other guys because, again, in baseball corporate world, and he knows this better than anyone else, you don't have a shield. Ethan Katz is not around anymore for White Sox fans to point fingers at and be like, why can't these guys stop walking the world? At some point, the director of pitching will start getting some heat. So hopefully the White Sox is spring training. I'm sure they're going to work really hard, make sure that Noah Schultz's knee is okay, but there'll be a lot of attention in the command and control for Hagen Smith in spring training because the White Sox need better stuff, and it sounds like it's going to come internal, and that'll be up to the new pitching coach to see if they can help out with that.
I like that we haven't even discussed Marcus Thames at all. We're just like, both in terms
tough
of
gig,
the
man.
Well, yeah, production, and then just nobody knows about hitting coaches. Like,
right.
I gave up around Jeff Manto in terms of figuring out like what a hitting coach actually means and what his track record. As long as he's not saying like objectively backwards things about how the game is played in 2025, I was like, sure, go nuts. We'll see how it looks like at the end of the year.
Is it Andy Martino from the Yes Network or SNY in New York?
Yeah.
SNY, yeah.
He was tweeting that the Yankees rely heavily on the traject machine to be prepared for opposing pitchers. Well, they don't have it. They can't travel with it. So that's why they're getting their butts kicked by the Blue Jays in the first two games, because they're just not accustomed to see Trey Yesavage. I think whoever the White Sox new hitting coach is, the first interview question is, do you know how to use traject? Yes or no? If you check off yes, congratulations, you move on to the next round. If you answer no, sorry, you can't get this job, it seems like.
I mean, I think it's probably universally unknown at this point, especially in hitting circles. I think it's more like, I think it's a weak excuse. Like, did they have it on the road all year before this point?
Right.
Like, were people never able to hit on the road before the traject was invented? it's true that like we never like kind of move backwards in like luxury. You get used to what you have. It's hard to retreat, but the idea that like we're, you know, helpless without, you know, the newest fanciest machine seems like, I don't know. Is the sales rep in the room with you right now talking?
It takes forever to get one.
Well, it's funny, like we had that conversation with the White Sox in terms of why you know, they struggled to score on the road. And I thought that just in terms of, you know, a team that's getting better based on how heavily they use traject and but are not like so skilled as hitters that they could be expected to perform well in every situation against every team, against every opponent. You know, that would make sense that, perhaps that edge, being at home, being with their technology they've just adopted, could provide a little bit of a boost. But, two things is one, the Yankees should be better than that. Two, now when you look up home and away, their away splits are better. Somehow over the course of the year, they hit better on the road than they did at home. So yeah.
Love it.
It feels like red meat for like a frequent thread in like Yankee fan like grievance where they're like their org has too much money and too much tech and they've gotten away from the purity of baseball. So now like paint like, oh, we're too into hitting homers, the most efficient way of scoring runs. We're too into like developing like elite four seam spin rate or whatnot. Like we need to go back to just pitching in some way. It's just all right. Okay.
It's like musicians, like technically proficient, but they have no soul.
Yeah.
Where's the feel?
Even when I get what Notorious B.I.G. was talking about, I didn't really relate to Mo Money, Mo Problems like that much.
Yeah. Well, whoever the White Sox hire, obviously the White Sox are embracing the new tech and incorporating. So that will be something that whoever the White Sox do bring on staff, they either have experience, they have to have experience with this new tech, and maybe they can help the White Sox continue their efforts to catch up to the rest of Major League Baseball, maybe be a league leader in some areas. But I'm excited to see and who the White Sox bring in again. It creates busy work for us. And when we get the rumor names, we'll report on the rumor names that are interviewing for the White Sox openings. But we know it'll be a new pitching coach, a new hitting coach going into 2026. And also gives us another opportunity to learn more on the type of people that Chris Getz and Will Venable want to be part of the Chicago White Sox organization. But it would help any new coaches if the White Sox just had more and better talent going into next season. Now, some of that better talent for the Chicago White Sox, of course, we're getting really excited. Brayden Montgomery had a good 2025 season, and the Arizona Fall League is starting. This will give an opportunity for Hagen Smith eventually to work on some of that command and control issues that he had over the season, as both Montgomery and Smith are on the Glendale Desert Dogs roster. But James, you tweeted out on Sunday, Brayden Montgomery is not going to be ready for the start of the Arizona Fall League. What's going on with Montgomery, and is there a chance that he plays any games this fall in Arizona?
It was the day before the AFL starts, or will be starting on Monday, and I decided to check in. I'm like, because he hasn't obviously played any games, like we've seen him ramping up or doing rehab games, like, hey, is he actually going to play tomorrow? And I said, no, he's a couple weeks away, that, his foot's fine. They felt his heel, but he's still kind of ramping up activity to be, game ready. And they said that he will, play in a couple of weeks. Sure, like things could, he could have a setback or something feels weird or like something doesn't stabilize as quick as I expect it to. I don't have any specific cause other than like, I don't know, a cynical worldview, which is sure. I'm getting more of that every day to say that he's not going to play in the AFL at all, because it certainly was the intention. He did, participate in media day and all that. But right now they're saying it's just like, he's still kind of healing. I mean, it was a broken bone and they were pretty aggressive in saying like, oh yeah, he's still going to play the AFL right out of it. And now it seems like we're being subjected to maybe a more normal variable rehab experience where he doesn't feel necessarily 100% exactly at the time in the he's more of the 6 week timeline than maybe 4 to 6 week range. I don't know.
Yeah. Josh Rojas came to mind in terms of like foot problem in the spring and like, he'll be back and just never quite looked right. And so perhaps they check their enthusiasm a little bit. Also, like, he played a full season, after missing his draft year, the pro time he could have logged in his draft year. Like he logged basically all the games and played appearances except for like the last week of the season. So like, I was surprised to see him on the AFL roster in the first place, cause I figured like, oh, he might just, he played enough. Good job, Brayden. Go get him next year. And the fact that he's on it surprised me to begin with. So it wouldn't, perhaps they look at his foot, they look at like the way he's recovering and just say like, yeah, maybe we're pushing a little bit too much, and take the 500 something plate appearances he logged over the course of the season and call that good.
James, is this the same foot that he injured during the College World Series a couple years ago?
I don't think so. That was left ankle and this is right.
Okay.
Right. And that was just last year.
Hmm.
He's still young.
So both his legs are compromised.
Great.
I mean, they're both like blunt trauma rather than like non-contact, or he's running it failed on him in some way. Like in both instances, it's kind of like an injury where it's hard to blame him. Obviously, all injuries accumulated like have a residue, and you don't want to just keep breaking things, even if it's like there's no, you know, smoking gun of a structural issue at play. Like if you got hit by pigeons and broke your foot 10 years in a row, that'd be bad. You know, there's no red flag, you know, towards like habitual issues, other than like whenever you're recovering from one of these things, you have to be wary of compensatory issues when you're rehabbing. But I'm sure he's well versed in that by now.
I'm not asking for any specific names, but James, if Montgomery can't go, the White Sox can send another player to the Glendale Desert Dogs, right? Like some of these guys have to be ready to play just in case.
Yeah, I mean, Harold Rosado was the sub for Noah Schultz. So theoretically, yeah, I imagine it'd be like someone very boring.
Sure. I was just the logistics of how does that work. I don't know if there's like an injured list and a reserve roster that the Desert Dogs can call up guys from.
Yeah, I imagine they could put another entry in. I feel like it'd be weird if they were like beholden or demanded to send an AFL replacement like Brian Gallagher, get out of bed and like at 5 a.m. and strip him off there or something like that. But they have sub depth, their other injured players. So maybe.
Got it. All right. So when it comes to the AFL, looking at the other players the White Sox are sending to the Glendale Desert Dogs, Jim, is there anyone that jumps out to you that for White Sox fans that loosely track what happens in the Arizona Fall League, that this is somebody to pay attention to in the fall? Maybe not someone who's going to be like Adam Engel, who wins Arizona Fall League MVP, but could be interesting.
Sam Antonacci is probably the one of the most name recognition. He's fascinating to follow just because he has a very...
Coastal Carolina guy, right?
Yes. He just, not a whole lot of power, gets on base by any means possible. 35 hit by pitches. Nobody else in the White Sox organization had more than 14. So that gives you an example of just, how he does not give an inch in the batter's box. Not a fixture at a defensive position, probably because he doesn't have a whole lot of power. So you can't expect him to anchor down second base or third base for a whole season. Probably going to be more of a, complimentary player in infield, but see how he looks in a showcase scenario versus being a high motor guy who can succeed in the lower minors or double A. Sometimes guys just have create so much action that it overwhelms defenses, or they just can't be denied at those levels. And then when they get up to a more professional level of baseball, they become less of a standout player, more of just a guy. So he's always on the cusp because of that lack of power of being just a guy, but so far has defied everything thrown at him so far. Ryan Gallany is kind of interesting. Another guy who, how much did the Southern League kill him in terms of any kind of chance of power production? Or is he going to be a first baseman who like tops out at 15 homers and then, really has to figure out how to get by? Carson Jacobs, when he and Noah Schultz were both on the Desert Dogs roster, like that took care of their front courts. Cause Schultz is 6'10", Jacobs is 6'9". Jacobs has you hear about like how advanced Schultz is for strike throwing given his size. Jacobs is the more typical, very tall, a lot of walks because all limbs don't sync up, but occasionally gets on runs where he strikes out a ton of guys and creates problems. So he seems like somebody to give chances to in such an environment, in the event that it finally all clicks for him and then becomes a monster. So I think those are the three that jump out to me, aside from Hagen Smith as well. Just seeing if there's any kind of continuity with his strike throwing ability. Like towards the end of the year, there were better stretches. There was still like the inning where it could all become undone. And I think that's probably the next thing for him to tackle, is just avoiding that killer inning that spikes his pitch counts and creates all sorts of traffic and high stress pitches that limit him to four innings instead of five or six.
Is Smith going to get a lot of pitching time in Arizona, James? What's the strategy here with Hagen Smith in Arizona?
That remains to be seen, right? That depends on like how comfortable he looks and like how, much I want to go. I want to dust off like an old interview from Zaleski and say like the initial goal was like around 110 innings from him. So he's a little shy of that. So they'd have some room to work with.
Okay.
I'd be surprised if he was like pitching six innings in a game or something like that. But they should have some latitude. And certainly they would say like, all right, we finally got him on a roll. And then he'd like would walk four guys in an inning while otherwise looking awesome. So it's not moving quite as like quick as, you know, the optimism of like, all right, we figured out the mechanical issue. Now he's going to roll from going forward. It hasn't been that kind of turnkey process for him quite yet. The stuff is ticked up and the velo went up. And obviously that's what, you know, Bannister argues is kind of the main thing with him. Things will kind of fall into place if he has elite stuff, but yeah, it remains to be seen. He's been mercurial as far as figuring out when he'd finally get on a run akin to his junior year. Maybe this is it. It's not a great offensive environment for it, but we'll see.
Yeah. In last year with Arkansas and Winston-Salem, Hagen Smith pitched a combined 91 and two thirds innings, of course, different levels of competition. With Birmingham this year, 75 and two thirds innings for Smith. Does anyone ever get up to 25 innings in the Arizona Fall League? That seems like a lot. I feel like a lot of these are, am I wrong, Jim? Like 2-3 inning appearances. They don't really want to stress out the pitchers.
Well, that, and they have so many other pitchers that need the time. So it's right. A showcase for everybody. So yeah, I don't think the EC guys go beyond three with regularity.
Got it. All right. Well, I'm curious to see on how the Desert Dogs and the White Sox, what they do with Hagen Smith this fall. But if he does pitch on the regular, that's certainly something worthwhile to follow. But Jim always does an excellent job as far as recapping what the Desert Dogs are doing, what the White Sox prospects are doing. So continue to go to SoxMachine.com daily and check out how the Desert Dogs and what the White Sox players are doing down in the Arizona Fall League. And you also, the Dominican League will be starting up soon, right, Jim?
No, that's done for the...
Done for the year.
Yeah, that's done for the year.
Do you mean like Lidom? Like Dominican Winter League?
Yes.
Oh, the Winter League. Okay, I thought you said the like affiliate. No, that's more of that's a case where it's a mishmash of professionals. So like we'll keep an eye on like Lenin Sosa. Like if there are any like Lenin Sosa developments of him just going off and continuing what he's doing, occasionally look at the scoreboards or the leaderboards. But yeah, they'll be starting soon as well.
They might have convinced Lenin to stop playing baseball for a hot second this one offseason. Well, it remains to be seen. I think, though, Aldrin Batista has been showing, like, posts on Instagram that he's pitching for Estrellas Orientales. So he might be a lead-on watch for us, since I thought he was kind of a sleeper pick for the system before he had his injury that wiped out most of his year.
Got it. Well, I know that some White Sox fans are hoping that Lenin did play winter ball, maybe played for Ozzy and continued working on its defense. So he had some type of defense position heading into spring training.
Yeah, that'll do it. Not the Ozzy part, but like that 30 games are going to change him as a, like, fundamentally as a defender. Like,
you never know.
Him working with Ozzy would be a great help. I don't mean to dismiss him that, but like, I think he is what he is on several ways at this stage of his development.
What are the Suspicious Barbecue guys going to bug you about in the offseason, James, then? Weren't they the ones being like, are you seeing what Lenin Sosa's doing?
That was fair. Like, it's, you feel like you're getting people who are disseminated, like you're the cult leader and you've been disseminating propaganda, and then someone's bringing your propaganda back to you. That's what it felt like a little bit to have them talk about Lenin to me, but sure.
But again, any offseason activity for the White Sox, we'll be covering it on SoxMachine.com. The final thing in this podcast, we're going to play the game, and many of you already played on SoxMachine.com, the Sporacle Quiz every Saturday. Ted, thank you so much. Ted Melvey, our Sporacle Quiz Master, quizzes us every week about random things concerning the Chicago White Sox. Some of them are very timely when it comes to current events, but every season he challenges us to name all the players that played a game for the Chicago White Sox in 2025. There are 62 players. And for those, you can watch this on video, you can go to youtube.com/SoxMachine. And watch Jim and James throw daggers at me as they try to list off of the names and I try to keep up. But we're going to play together and see how many we can get right. Ted has given us 25 minutes to get all 62. All right, what's our goal here, guys? Out of 62, what are we trying to aim for?
63.
Tristan Gray being the honorable mention. Yeah, I haven't. I just glanced at the comments because I didn't want any spoilers, but I just looked, glanced for numbers, and nobody claiming 100% yet that I've seen. I've seen some 61s, but I haven't seen 62. So I feel like
ones.
The golden ticket is still out there.
So I feel like three, you know, not one of us could be expected to get 62 on our own, but I figure the three of us should be able to get it. I think less than 100%, three of us combined would be a disappointment.
All right. So what's the strategy here? Do we go with the ones we should know, or should we try to figure out the toughest ones first?
I have one in the chamber to start out with.
All right.
To get out of my head, because I've been thinking about him since April for this purpose.
All right. Excellent. We get 25 minutes. Let's see if we can do this, guys. And for our podcast listeners, the time starts now. Who is it, Jim?
Travis Jankowski.
Jankowski. Oh my God. He played seven games for the White Sox.
He was like, oh, Jake Mariznick.
Noda, the one that complained about playing right field. James, yeah. You got one?
Old Trickney. Well, this is intended. Miguel Castro.
He was another one I had lined up ever since I realized he was still in the 60-day IL. I filed that one away.
Wow, six games for Castro. All right, Jim.
Okay, let's go a double because I saw them both in Nashville, Peguero and Hudson.
Oh, my God. You're going to force me to know how to spell Peguero. That's not
G-U-E-R-O, I think.
There we go. Two games? Oh, my gosh. All right, and who was the other?
Hudson.
Is this Brian Hudson?
Yep.
Four games for Brian Hudson.
And then Vinny Capra while I'm thinking about Nashville.
Yeah, Vinny Capra. Oh, Narvaez.
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 N-A-R-V-A.
Yep.
There we go. Four games. All right. You got one, James?
Old Luis Robert. I've heard of him.
Wow. 110 games for Luis. Taking the, our beat reporter taking the obvious ones. He's already scared, Jim.
Hey, let's go Matt Theis and Corey Lee. Just the original catcher combination.
Yeah. All right. And then Lee.
I froze because I thought, let's go old safety valve Danny Mendick. No, I don't feel like that's right this time.
All right. You know what? I'm looking at the Sporacle for our podcast listeners. There's a reliever with one game. They appeared in one game. I'm already scared. I'm sweating, Jim, and who that is?
Palish.
Yep.
Is it Palish?
I bet it is.
It is. Yep. You got it.
Here's my list of guys on Birmingham. So Grant Taylor, while I'm thinking of him, because I was thinking of guys directly from Birmingham.
Oh, we got two Taylors. So if you put in Taylor, you get two. Michael A. and Grant. Okay.
Bobby Dalbec.
Oh, yeah. Dalbec did play seven games
Nashville.
For Dalbec.
And then Andrew Vaughn while I'm thinking about Nashville.
Yeah, Andrew Vaughn, 48 games.
Did all 62 White Sox appear in the Nashville Sounds game at some point?
Oh, Amaya, Jacob Amaya, opening day shortstop, 36.
Bryce Wilson
games.
While I'm thinking about Nashville.
All right, so you get not only Bryce Wilson, but Steven Wilson. We're at 18 podcast listeners out of 62.
Jared Schuster, spelled S-H-U-S-T-R. Yeah. No,
I always want to put a C. Jared, 12 games for Jared Schuster.
Let's go the Rule 5 picks, Smith, Vassell, and Workman.
Oh, Gage Workman. I would have totally forgot about Gage Workman. There he is. Gage Workman, three right, games so, playing, third base and short.
And then Derek Hill, I think, is maybe the other outfielder with three games.
Derek Hill played four games? What?
Fletcher, is he down at the bottom?
I think he's a bit more.
Oh, 12, yeah. So
Dominic, 12 games for Dominic. Yeah, I'm looking at the position player front. An outfielder played only three games for the
Ramos,
White Sox. Well, Ramos played more than... Oh, he did play only four games. So Brian Ramos is your third baseman with four games.
Elko's got to be that 23 first baseman, right?
Yep, you're right. Tim Elko. So we're at 26 out of 62.
Robertson's got to be down here.
Oh, yeah. Will Robertson. Danger zone. 24 games in the outfield.
Slater. Yeah.
So Austin Slater, 51 games.
You put in Phil and Talkman, just get the other part of the platoon going. There you go.
Yeah. So Talkman, 93 games. I guess
Rojas.
Put in Benintendi. Am I not? Why can I not spell Benintendi all of a sudden? Benintendi. All right. What was that, James?
Josh Rojas.
Rojas.
Let's
Okay,
get
so
Teal and Caro just to take care of those catcher slots. So,
Teal and Caro. Wait a second. So other than Jacob Amaya, who is the rant? And was it Vinny Capra that you were thinking of, Jim, that took over for Jacob Amaya at shortstop?
as like the somebody who just was there to
Like an
not
Andy
play.
Wilkins, Paul Konerko type substitution,
Yeah,
or
something like that. Okay, I'm really. Who else played outfield for the White Sox?
who didn't play outfield for the White Sox?
So Robertson, Slater, Talkman. Workman is the
Baldwin.
guy they got from the Cubs.
Yeah.
Oh no. All right,
Let's
I'm
put
already
Baldwin while
skipped.
I'm thinking about him, just because I'm thinking of the outfielders. Let's get
So
him taken care of.
Brooks Baldwin played 103 games. Well, then we might as well put in Montgomery and Mydroth. All
And
right.
Vargas, let's fill out the rest of the starters here.
Yeah,
Sosa.
Vargas, Sosa,
I
Lenin
think
Sosa,
Sosa
140
leads this team
games.
in games played every day, Lenin.
Yes,
He turned on the
awesome.
TV at 7 o'clock on a weeknight, and you were expecting some Lenin.
The kids who came to the park, once saved their money for going to the park for the only time that year, were guaranteed to see their favorite player, Lenin Sosa.
Who only appeared as a DH for 25 games for the White
Oh,
Sox?
primarily as DH. So, not only that's the primary position. So,
Okay. So then who is the primary, that they were primarily a DH for 25 games?
yeah, they could hit, but not really. Like, is
Yeah.
what I'm
Oh,
gathering.
Palacios. Palacios. Put him.
Oh,
Let's
yeah.
get.
Palacios.
Oh, he's got to be higher.
Oh, my
Yeah,
gosh.
51 game.
51
51. Yep.
games. Okay. So that takes care of. Oh, put a
Oh,
Caleb Freeman while I'm looking at that middle column of relievers that didn't
Caleb
appear
Freeman.
much.
Oh, Jolks. Corey Jolks played. There we go. That's one of them. Six games for Corey Jolks.
Wilson, or we already have Bryce Wilson. We got
Yep.
both
Yeah.
Wilson. Right.
Yeah.
Uh,
So let's go.
Clevinger. Clevinger, yep.
I would have totally forgot about
Let's
that.
go
Eight games for
Boozer and
Clevinger.
Ellard, thinking about lefties. And then Iser as well, I'm thinking about lefties.
That's probably your leading appearances pitcher, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh,
Leisure would
Murph
be right
Dog.
below him.
Murphy,
Yep.
my guy.
Then Leisure would be below Iser to fill in that gap. Yep. So
Yep. So
Perez, Hauser.
Savali.
we're at 50 podcast listeners. We're at 50 out of 62.
Okay, so Cannon, Martin,
Smith, or Burke.
Yeah, Burke. So we got this. I know we're missing one starting pitcher. Who started 12 games for the White Sox? Smith, Burke, Martin, Cannon,
Oh, Gilbert's
Savali,
while I'm thinking about him.
Gilbert, Alexander. Why am I blanking
His
here?
dead air as we sit in confusion. Good
Why am I
God.
blanking? Who started 12 games for the White Sox that we haven't
I don't
mentioned?
know, Josh. Don't you think I want to
You're
know?
the beat
I'd love to
reporter.
see Will Venable get this. Like, can you name everybody who played for you? He gets like 40.
Oh, Lord. All right. Well, yeah, we got Gilbert. We got Alexander. Oh, my gosh. All right. Who also played third base and first base this year? Elko Vaughn,
Oh,
Vargas,
Meade.
Sosa. Oh,
He
yeah.
didn't play any
Curtis Meade.
seconds. I looked at that as like, wow, for a guy who was supposed to play around the infield, he really stuck to the corners and didn't hit for power.
So we are at 56 out of 62. We need three relievers, a starting pitcher, an outfielder, and somebody who is primarily a DH. All right.
I feel like DH, thinking of him as a DH is a trap.
It is, right? Anyone that went down to Charlotte that
Yeah,
joined the White Sox?
I'm thinking about my who I saw in Charlotte.
Nick Maton.
Oh, yes.
Oh
Nick
yeah.
Maton, James
25
Fenian
games.
saving it. He got the DH. Way to go.
25 games.
The biggest enemy is like not realizing, man, that guy really played that much.
We're missing one position player. We almost got all the position players.
We're also just missing a guy who made like 12 starts.
Shot James. Who made more starts than Hauser and Perez? Who got hurt during the year? It's like he.
Owen White. Owen White.
Oh, yeah. Owen White.
That might be the
Three. It's okay. So I got
that's the
the
three. Oh, boy. my gosh. I'm just trying to. Oh,
also villain.
Gomez. You.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yoenis Gomez.
Good poll.
Oh, there we go. I helped. We're 59 out of 62.
Also Altavilla.
Oh, yeah, Altavilla. We're at 60 out of 62. A reliever that appeared in 16 games and an outfielder
Winkleman.
Who.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Or Gonzalez would be the. Oh, everybody just knows it was Winkleman. Like,
yeah. So we got Winkleman, Gonzalez. All right, we got all the pitchers. We are at 61 out of 62. We got 15 minutes on the timer. Can we remember who played three games in the White Sox outfield?
This is going to be the most painful 15 minutes of our lives.
Yeah, and also listeners, is there just like, either they know the answer, just screaming it.
Oh my gosh. Oh, all right.
Is this someone who played center field? Is this a fast person? Is this a slow person?
Just a tall
Is it Scarlet Knight, or is it someone who just came in on the breeze and blew back out?
Anyone they picked up from waivers? So we got Robert, we got Taylor, we got Talkman, Benintendi, Slater.
I mean, this is someone who played three games.
Yeah.
Right. Robertson, Jankowski, Corey Jolks, Derek Hill.
This is going to wind up being someone who's like on an active playoff roster right now.
Duke Ellis.
I was about to try it. I'd be like, did we forget that Duke Ellis played for the
No, Zach Deloach was the one that came up. No, he didn't. He didn't surface.
Zach Deloach didn't get called up.
No, he got hurt before.
Yeah.
Who did they sign when he got hurt? Was there some sort of minor league free agent that they brought in? Someone from the Pirates for some reason?
Ryan Reynolds. Yeah, I'm just going through my Charlotte rosters.
I'm just going to start typing in popular surnames. Johnson. Yeah. Not it. Darn. All right.
Or got the Smiths taken care of.
Yeah.
Maybe he's Yolmer somehow.
Yolmer Sanchez.
Danny Mendick, just to see.
This is awful. No Mendick, no Sanchez. We got 13 minutes left to try to figure out the last one.
Is it somebody you screamed at in the 108?
Oh, I don't recall. Oh, wait. Well, no, we got Jankowski. I remember somebody screaming, "Who are you?" And I think that was.
Which was someone else, like, really early season?
I think it's early season. I think it's like April.
Because Gallo didn't make the team. Who else was bouncing around early on?
Do you remember the opening day lineup?
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Yeah, that was the Amaya, that was Maton in terms of like the surprising ones.
Yeah.
Already got Dalbec.
Who hit well in spring training? I don't think you made the team. You got cut, right? The Angels. I was rooting for him to make the White Sox.
Not Colas.
No. Oh, man. He was Angels? Raking in spring training. He might have been the second baseman.
Oh, Drury?
Yeah, Brandon Drury. He didn't play for the White Sox.
No. Cal Mitchell didn't make it either. I don't think.
Ooh, you know what? That might be worth it. Let's try Cal Mitchell.
Or anybody named Mitchell.
No. Anyone named Cal? No. All right. Still at 61 out of 62. You know, podcast listeners, if you're snickering right now and laughing because you want a baseball reference and you found this and you are just listening to us torture ourselves to try to figure out who this is, damn you.
Did you just run a red light because you were screaming the name at your car stereo?
Oh, Lord. Okay.
Are you that player currently listening, growing more infuriated with every minute?
Are you about to retire? Are you Trey Magoo just going to retire? Like, just.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just trying to do it by association. Like, speaking of Magoo, Jimenez, trying to think of. Word association, free association.
Drew Baker didn't make it. Wasn't
Did
Dominic
he?
Fletcher. I don't think so. No,
he didn't.
Because they traded him because they didn't want to add him to the 40, and I don't think the White Sox ever did.
Okay. Is it anyone on Birmingham that got called up for a brief
Well, so
moment?
I always eliminate that because so few Birmingham hitters got called
Yeah.
up. It was
Yeah,
just Jacob
Gonzalez, yeah,
Gonzalez.
Jacob Gonzalez like was the one, aside from like Cayden Connor, I think made a couple emergency appearances in Charlotte, but
Okay. Is this somebody who just pinched ran?
ooh, that's a good suggestion. Where I got Corey
They
Lee.
didn't get any at bats, but they played in the outfield defense and they pitch ran.
Greg Jones.
Yes, that's it.
Josh, you
Yes, we got
just. it. Yes. Way to go, James. Yes. We did
Your hint was
it.
spot on.
We did it.
Also, we could have just done the
Unbelievable.
popular surname thing, and that would have worked too.
Oh, yeah, that sure would have. Duh. We would have saved some time. Well, we did it. And re-recorded it. Believe it or not, it took all three of us when we got all 62 players, and we did it within 15 minutes. We had 10 minutes and 14 seconds left to go on the clock. I'm so glad James
So,
remembered Greg Jones.
who would you here are the guys I would have missed. I would have missed Jones, obviously.
Yeah.
Probably would have missed Maton. Like, I don't know that I think the
Yep.
games played would have just thrown me off to where I would never would have come back to it. Probably I could see Schuster being one of just being eminently forgettable and also being like claimed at the end of the year by another team, not being on any of the Charlotte teams I saw. So I could see those three tripping me up. Gomez was another one that I probably would have got back to him, but just that I didn't get it in real time. So that probably would have thrown me off the 12 starts. So I think I could have gotten 59.
I'm
The
going
idea
on a
that
list.
Gomez had more than like half as many starts as Cannon like doesn't compute in my brain a little bit in terms of like view of what the rotation was through the course of the season.
Yeah. See, I would have forgot about Winkelmann. That would have made me angry. I would have purposely forgotten about Clevinger. Castro, I would have forgotten. Freeman, I would have forgotten. Hudson, I would have forgotten a lot of these relievers. I think without you guys, I'm probably around 49 or 50 out of 62. A lot of these relievers I would have forgot about.
I would
But
have
yeah.
blanked out on random people. Hill would have been tough because I've never spoken to him. He got added to the roster on a road series that I wasn't on. He was there in Washington, but like, there wasn't some reason to like. I had more things to do than a meet Garrett Hill on the 160th game of the season type of article.
Yeah.
So, okay. I would have forgotten Workman had he not I'd not associated with him with Smith and Vassell. Like he
Yeah, that would
was.
have been tough.
Yes. Yeah. Palacios, I probably would have forgotten. He
Palacios would have
didn't
been
play
tough because
51
the
games.
51 games next to it would have been like, no, that's someone
Yeah. It's not him. No
else.
way. No way. I can't believe Will Robertson played in 24 games this year for the White
Maybe
Sox. Wow.
Narvaez would have tripped me up too. Just because I just picture him in Birmingham and not in Chicago.
Yeah.
I also just felt like it felt like a year where they didn't use that many catchers. Like they were pretty
Yeah.
stable. Like they had the two rookies and then neither of them got hurt. So it didn't seem like it was like a ton, huge flux of catchers. So that it feels a little sneaky that they got up to five used.
Yeah, it feels like it was Theisen Lee and then Thielen Carroll, like a changing of the guard and efficiently done.
Yeah. I'm proud of us. We did it. We got all 62 and only took us 15 minutes. Good job, team. See, there you go.
Hooray.
This is why you become a Sox Machine subscriber, so we can watch the White Sox, so you don't have to. So when we play this end of the year quiz, the three of us combined can remember everyone that played for the White Sox.
Also, probably Greg Jones, not a Sox Machine podcast listener. He was not part of the plans. He's not part of the
Hopefully.
organization. So I don't think we hurt his feelings.
No.
But, college teammates, I think, with Baldwin, or at least I went to the same college. So
Yes.
if Brooks is a loyal listener, please, Brooks, we think so highly of you. Please forgive us for this.
Yeah, we got Brooks relatively. We circled around him because we knew he was part of it.
Yeah, UNC Wilmington, the pride of UNC Wilmington. Well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you guys had a lot of fun listening. And for those that watched, again, we have this video on our YouTube channel. Thank you for watching us.
I should point out average score 59. So at
Percent.
59%, 59%. So grading on a curve, we've got like a double plus.
Yeah.
Maybe this is reflective of sports media not being a great place, but subscribe to the only White Sox coverage where you can count on us to know all the players on the team.
And that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You could also listen to the show and watch our videos. Like, again, if you want to replay, watch us struggle mentally and physically at times, trying to guess all 62 White Sox players, watch our videos on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on social media. We're on all the social media platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow James at JR Fegan. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. We are trying to gain more followers on Instagram and posting more content there. So if you are on the gram, please follow us on Instagram. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, sign up to become a Sox Machine subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5, but Jim, is there still time for those that want to take advantage of the annual subscription sale?
Yes, we'll be running it through Monday, probably a little bit into Tuesday, because I'll turn it off at some point during the day on Tuesday, where if you sign up for an annual subscription, normally you get 12 months for the price of 11. Through sometime Tuesday, it'll be 12 months for the price of 10. So a savings of anywhere from extra 5 to 25 to even, if we're talking Veterans Committee, more than that. So sign up today, help fund our off-season travel, the GM meetings, the winter meetings, planning for spring training to give you the most, to use a Rick Hahn phrase, robust coverage of White Sox spring training possible.
And again, you can go to SoxMachine.com/products to pick your plan. And again, right now, if you're like, annual is a little too rich for me, you can sign up for a monthly subscription. And for those that want to help out your friends and family members, because the holidays are coming up, you can also gift subscriptions as well.
So yes, if you'd like, point.
If your dad loves the coverage, but he hasn't signed up yet, help out your parents. You can gift them a subscription, an annual subscription, take advantage of the sale. Coming up again, that expires on Monday or whenever Jim turns it off on Tuesday. But thank you again for listening to this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. The Sox Machine Podcast is part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network and your home for all things Chicago White Sox baseball. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I am Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.